This is not how I saw our date going. Instead of drowning in resentment, I remind myself to look on the bright side. I went on a public date with my boyfriend. We're here today, breathing, living, and we have love, so much damn love. He's okay, we're okay. Leaning against my bed's headboard, I angle the phone, everything below my abdomen not in frame. I already struggled out of my shirt and attached my sling to my bare chest. Pharaoh helped, kind of. Kind of a lot. And then he had to take a phone call from the hospital. Paperwork shit, his words. So while he stepped out of the attic, I decided to go live and get this off my chest. Boundaries. Human decency. Don't fuck with my boyfriend. I get that you all will have your opinions on Pharaoh. But shitting on him because you love me makes no damn sense. Emoji hearts flutter up the screen, and the ticker tape of comments speeds rapidly, making them hard to read. But I catch these. Sorry, you could do better than him. Marrow for life. I love you, Maximoff. That sucks what happened with Pharaoh. OMG, the burn on your face. Are you okay? He's not good enough for you. We just don't want you to get hurt. Pharaoh is the last person in the whole universe who'd hurt me. On the live stream, my sharp features stare back at me. My forest green eyes look greener tonight and almost pierce the screen. He looks upset, OMG. Are you mad? We love you. You're a dick. When's We Are Callaway airing? Don't be sad. I rest my head back. When you fuck with Pharaoh, you hurt me. So if you care about me at all, don't come at him with things like I deserve better and he's not good enough for me. Pharaoh Keen is the only one I let in. The only one. I'd point at my chest if I could. That's not by accident. It's because he's more than enough for me. He's every damn thing. The door squeaks open. Fuck. I had no plan to make some sappy declaration. One that Pharaoh would love to quote for eons upon eons of time. Just to agitate the fuck out of me. Dear world, tell me my boyfriend didn't hear me profess a colossal amount of love. Sincerely, a human in love. Pharaoh kicks the door closed with a growing smile. He nears my dresser and then leans his elbows on the surface, looking only at me. He heard what I said, without a doubt. Using my feet, I push myself higher against the headboard. Gray sheets are crumpled beneath me. Sitting straighter, I'm careful not to jostle my phone in hand. Then I focus on the live stream. You all should know. I pause, layering on severity. I'm Pharaoh Redford Keen, and I have a gigantic, massive crush on Maximoff Hale. I look up and Pharaoh rubs his bottom lip, giving me a long scorching once over. He approaches, the bed undulating with his weight, and he's suddenly right next to me. In the camera frame. The comments section explodes. OMG, it's Pharaoh. He's here, holy shit, holy shit. I'm dying. Me too. Pharaoh looks at the live stream, both of us able to see ourselves in the screen. He cups the back of my head, his fingers running casually in and out of my hair. I'm Maximoff Hale, he says to the 117K viewers, and 34 seconds ago, I lost my honesty merit badge. I try to feign confusion, but laughter rumbles in my lungs. Pharaoh lifts his brows at me like, you liked that. All comebacks and potential one-upping flits away, starving for more physical contact, for his mouth against my mouth, and to connect hard body to hard body. Before the viewers see me flash fuck-me eyes at Pharaoh, I shut off the video. Tossing it aside, my phone slips off the mattress and clatters to the floorboards. I turn into Pharaoh, he turns into me, and our eyes meet head-on first, pulsating with need. And our lips collide. I break apart his mouth as I breathe into the kiss, and I taste mint against his tongue. Our hands wrestle with our clothing. He unzips me, unbuttons and wrenches my jeans to my thighs. My cock pulses and pulses, and he eats up the arousal in my eyes like my pleasure feeds his pleasure. I tug his pants halfway down his legs. Pharaoh grips the back of his black shirt, pulling the fabric off his head, revealing his nipple piercing. And the inked dagger and skull pirate across the ridges of his abs. Fuck me. I pull off my jeans, and he throws his own pants off the bed. Down to boxer briefs, our mouths crush together again, and we inch off the headboard until his head meets a pillow. I split his muscular legs open with my knees, and while I deepen the roughest, most untamed kiss, I lower on top of Pharaoh, my left forearm braced on the mattress. A tinge of pain flares up in my shoulder, but I hone in on the mounting heat that ignites us. I grind my hips into him. His mouth-watering erection rubs against my hardening cock every single time I drive forward. Sweat builds, and between each kiss, our heavy grunts break the quiet. Pharaoh digs his fingers in my back and rakes his short nails across my skin, scratching down towards my ass. Fuck, fuck. Our tongues tangle more languidly than the forceful thrust of my hips. His hand draws down my boxer briefs and seizes my ass with the hottest goddamn squeeze. I tear from his lips, a raspy groan expelling from my burning lungs, spurring me to grind harder, rougher. His muscles strain. Fuck, Maximoff, Pharaoh groans. His other hand clasps my jaw in the best grip. He grapples for the lead and control, about to flip me. But I bear more of my weight on his chest, staying on top. Our eyes attach for a nerve-pricking beat. You want to fuck me? He asks, his graveled voice stroking my cock. God damn. More than you want to fuck me? I breathe heavily. He nips my lip between his teeth, and he whispers, not possible. I rock harder, fabric of boxer briefs still separating us. My ass flexes beneath his palm. I grind and grind. He grits down, nose flaring in intense arousal. Fuck, he grunts, his lips almost splitting apart in a coarse breath. Blood pounds in my veins, and I groan against his neck. Fuck, Pharaoh. He pushes me as hard against him as he can without causing me pain. My bound right arm obstructs our bodies from completely meeting, and my arm jerks in the canvas, wanting and aching to be all over him like he's all over me. I lift my head. Fuck my sling, I mutter, frustrated. Pharaoh pants as hard as me. It'd be easier if you weren't on top. If you'd let me flip us. I'm doing great, thanks, I say, too stubborn to lose the lead right now. Plus, once I'm on my back, I won't have enough strength to wrestle out from under him. Pharaoh studies my body. My left arm is more carved and toned than ever, since it's been picking up my right arm's slack. And whatever pain exists in my collarbone has melted beneath 500-degree blood-boiling desire. I rock slower and kiss him again, lips stinging beneath the force, and he pushes my ass for a deeper grind. Fuck me. I need inside of him. Soon. I lower my mouth to his chest, trailing over the inked lines of a pirate ship. Reaching his nipple, I suck and flick my tongue over the metal barbell. Pharaoh lets out a rougher breath, and he palms my cock. I lose balance on my left hand. Fuck, I curse. He hooks his legs around me, and before I even blink, he flips us in one careful and effortless movement. Tapping into his strength and MMA skill, he tops me, and my back gently meets the mattress. He's protecting my body from my aggressive self-destruction. I like to manhandle and be manhandled. Not new news, but it's pretty difficult with a surgically repaired collarbone that's in the process of healing. He straddles my waist and his chest is hoisted off mine. Tattooed hands splay on either side of my shoulders on the mattress. Our eyes create hot tracks along our faces, and I run my large hand across his rough jaw, a less than close shave. God, his masculinity fists me, and my carriage elevates in a blistered breath. He turns his head slightly and kisses my palm. I rake my fingers through his bleach white hair and then hold his warm neck. Pharaoh rubs my bicep before whispering, I'm being as rough with you as I can be without hurting you. He wishes he could give me more. If he had fractured a bone, I would have been the same way with him. Not hesitating or bubble wrapping him, just highly aware of his physical limitations, and knowing that he'd want to push against them. I nod once. I get it, man. Pharaoh starts smiling.
What? I ask.
How you call me man in bed, he tells me, lowering his lips to mine, a teasing breath away. He must catch my confusion because he clarifies. It's the way you always say it with extra force. It sounds more like I'm your man, not just any fucking man. He raises his brows at me. It's hot. I barely have time to react to that, because Pharaoh lowers more of his weight into me, and I throb. Fuck. I reach down and free us from our boxer briefs, shedding the last fabric we kicked the underwear off our ankles. I grip his length and mine together, rubbing us in a tight fist, pre-cum slick in my palm. I flex, breath knotted in my throat. Pharaoh shoves my hand aside and sits up off me. Don't jack us off. He reaches for the end table, his mosaic of pirate tattoos cascading down cut muscle. I watch his hands, two images inked on top, sparrows by his thumbs, and skull and crossbones in the middle. I crunch upward and push myself to my knees with one hand. He's knelt too, holding my gaze. Pharaoh shakes a black bottle and squirts lube in his palm. He strokes us, mixing lube with pre-cum, while we kiss. More aggressively, passionately. He tosses the bottle aside, and our mouths break, catching our breaths. What position were you thinking? Pharaoh asks, since many have been hypothetically eliminated. My brain says most sex positions are doable. And by most, I mean all. Me, topping you. On our sides, facing each other. He tilts his head at me like I've flown to Mars by myself and built a colony of one. On your side, he repeats. He makes a point of eyeing my shoulder, the bandage gone. A thick, reddened, puffy scar lines the length of my left collarbone. Yeah, I don't concede. No, fuck no, he says easily and waves me on. Keep going. I glance at his long, hardened cock. I want that in me as much as I want mine in him. I spoon you. If there are proper terms for these positions, I don't know them. I have a lot of sex, but I don't research the fuck out of it on the internet. That's also on your side, he says. Keep going. I exhale a hot breath. Doggy style, or the one where your legs are splayed to the side and I'm standing off the bed and entering you from behind. But I could bottom for that one. It's one of my favorite positions I've been in as a bottom. I think because he wrapped his hand around my neck while he pounded into me, and I was so into it, into him, and I saw how much he got off on that. Pharaoh contemplates for a half a second, and then waves me on again. Getting closer. With you flat on your back, missionary. He shakes his head, motion with two fingers to keep going. My brows knot. I'm getting the feeling you just want to know which positions I like. He smiles at me, like the word pure is on his tongue. That is part of the point, Wolf Scout. His matter-of-fact voice pumps my blood. I growl out, and then exhale roughly. I'm picking one now. Dresser. Standing. 19. Maximov Hale. I climb off the bed buck naked, and while he rises, equally buck-ass naked, I gesture him to me. Come over. Pharaoh doesn't hesitate. In one blink, he's reached me. He clutches my face and kisses me hard before he tears away and seizes the edge of the dresser. My pulse thrashes, pent up and fixated on that simple movement and his confidence that matches mine over and over. With my chest up against his tattooed back, I clutch his waist, and that's when I realize that he never grabbed a condom. He lubed us without one. No condom? I ask him. Pharaoh looks over his shoulder. No condom, he confirms. But if you want one, that's okay. This is a big deal. We've both been tested, we're both clean and monogamous. But we haven't taken that next step. Until now. To let me bareback, Pharaoh has to have complete trust in me that I won't cheat. I'd never. Same if we flip. I have to trust him. And I do, completely. I want to, I tell him, assured. He's barebacked with a serious boyfriend before, but I haven't. Pharaoh cups the back of my head, and we kiss with slow-burning intimacy that feels like descending gradually, gradually in warm, soothing waters. My head dizzies, and we part with ragged breath. Pharaoh angles forward again, his knee bent in a slight lunge, and he hangs his head, muscles relaxed. He glances over his shoulder to tell me, "You can come in me." I catch his smile as he adds, "I know you want to. God. And I know you want me to," I say, too hot now, too ready, and he doesn't deny that we're both dying for the same thing. While I tease his hole open with two fingers, I kiss the back of his neck. He rubs himself twice, and then he reaches backwards and grips my ass. Fuck me. I clutch his ass before I take my erection and press the tip to his hole. Easing myself in, the pressure around me narrows my eyes into aroused pinpoints. Fuck, Pharaoh groans. The further I go in, now all the way inside. Oh, fuck. Maximov. His throaty noise combines with mine, a raw sound scratching out of me. Christ. I rock my hips, pounding against him with mind-numbing friction. My hand shoots for his waist for deeper entry, gripping him. He white-knuckles the dresser, gritting down as a tangled moan ejects. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I run my hand up his back muscles. Pharaoh, I groan, and he pushes back into my cock. My head tries to loll back. Fucking fuck. I grip him harder, ramming, my ass flexing beneath his strong hold. Harder, he grunts, his forehead on his bicep. I pick up my pace and slam into him. He moans as I hit his prostate. I know the spot. Very goddamn well. I wrap my arm around his abdomen, aching to bow forward where my chest melts his back closer than close. Fuck this sling. Slowing, I eke out the movement, and more sweat beads up on both our bodies, skin slick and hair dampening. Fuck, I groan. Fuck. I quicken my rhythm, and I fucking explode. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Lights burst in my vision, nerves scorched alive. I dagger a glare on the ceiling, another gnarled noise in my throat. Pharaoh moans lowly into his arm, his tendon straining in his neck. Face reddening, he cages breath, and I come inside the guy I love. With a few more pumps, I milk my climax, and I watch his grip loosen on the dresser. Glancing back at me, he absorbs my pierced fuck-me eyes that still exist for him. He's really hard. Slowly I pull out, cum dripping off my tip, and I switch spots with him. As our paths cross, we draw together and kiss, not able to separate for a while. We push and pull for a lead, and I bring his back to the dresser, then he spins me, my back to the wood. I hold his jaw and kiss Pharaoh with my whole body. My waist, torso, and chest arch into him, reaching out for his fucking heart. And then willingly, I turn and face the dresser. I grip the edge with my only available hand, giving him access to push into me. This is still new for me, but the more and more I allow myself to be vulnerable with Pharaoh, the more my life feels at peace. I've found someone who can ease me in this intangible, miraculous, cosmic way. Pharaoh places a warm kiss to my bicep before he pulls me back some, adjusting my stance. "Pain?" he asks, referring to my arm. "Not that much. I must have rolled my shoulder and neck too far because the tendon sears." "Where?" he asks, his inked fingers toying with the outside of my hole. I drown in the fucking sensation. He stops. "Maximov. Focus. Closer to my neck. I'm all right. Just fuck me." I glance over my shoulder, and pain hammers my collarbone. "Maximov. Fuck, I'm not putting my dick in you if you keep hurting yourself to look at it." I hang my head forward, my muscles burning. "Who said I was looking at your cock?" I breathe heavily. "Maybe I was looking at the carpet." I was looking at his erection. Sure, Pharaoh says. Let's pretend you like the carpet more. I picture his tattooed hand wrapped around his length. I'm not at the right angle to see a thing, so my imagination has to be good enough. Pharaoh slips a finger inside of me, then works another. Fuck. Relax, he breathes. One of his hands holds my waist and squeezes me like, come on, Wolf Scout. I won't hurt you. I exhale a controlled breath and try not to tense. My pulse beats harder, body stirring. He retracts his hand, and a second later I feel greater pressure against my ass. My fingers dig into the dresser. You're still ridiculously tight. Pharaoh exhales. Hold on. He pushes in a little bit, then out, inching his way inside of me. My body reacts to his kindness, more like teasing, and I'm getting worked up again. Footsteps. I hear footsteps, racing up the staircase, to this attic. Pharaoh hears, but the door should be locked. It's not. It's not locked. Pharaoh is closer, and he pulls out completely, and in two strides he reaches the destination. He flips the lock as soon as the knob jingles and knuckles wrap the wood. Mafi! That's my little sister. Pharaoh and I exchange a look, our eyes widened at each other. Yeah, we just dodged what would have been the most awkward moment of both our lives. Mafi! She calls again, sounding a bit panicked. Just a sec. We're in a mad dash to clean up. I throw a towel at Pharaoh. He wipes up the cum that drips down his leg, and I rub my hands and body with another cloth. Next, I struggle to put on underwear and new jeans. Somehow, Pharaoh beats me at getting clothed. His boxer briefs and pants are on, and he even pulls a black Studio 9 shirt over his head. Come here, he whispers. I relinquish my fight with my jeans button, and his fingers effortlessly fish my button through the hole. Pharaoh tries to fix my disheveled hair, but I've already accepted the fact that she'll know we were fucking. I move his hand and point out. Smells like sex in here. It does, he says easily. I'm assuming you have a plan, Wolf Scout. I do. I'm not letting her pass the doorway. I'm pretty sure our lube is in plain sight, and the sheets are twisted and knotted like we've wrestle-fucked for hours. Pharaoh nods. Okay. And just as she calls my name again, I unlock and swing the door open. I solidify. Are you okay? I ask immediately. Luna doesn't look like Lona. Her light brown hair is pulled into a pin-straight pony. No marker streaks, no neon green makeup or star stickers on her cheeks. Black mascaraed lashes shade her amber eyes, and I realize she removed her earrings and tongue piercing. She's wearing a pink sundress. Jesus, I've never seen my sister wear a pink sundress. Uh-huh, Luna nods. Then I step onto the third floor landing where she stands. It's a small space before the stairs drop. Pharaoh leans his shoulder on the doorframe and cracks the door behind him, shutting out her view of our bedroom. Our bedroom. Never gets old. I'd almost maybe smile, but I'm dealing with my 18-year-old sister who's been body snatched, possibly by aliens. Maybe this is a bizarre role-playing theater thing, I don't know. I'm concerned, in case you weren't aware.
Hi, Pharaoh.
Luna throws up a hand in greeting. Hey, Luna. Pharaoh skims her in a quick sweep, brow spiking. What's with the new look? Luna tugs at the hem of her dress like it's uncomfortable.
Just, you know, thought I'd try something out.
She shrugs, a soft smile appearing as she looks at our unkempt hair and clothes.
Sorry to disturb your date night.
Pharaoh smiles wide and loosely crosses his arms. It's okay, I tell my sister, just happy she's not in serious trouble. What do you need? Luna fixes the spaghetti strap of her dress.
A condom.
I process, at a snail's pace. My brain has short-circuited. Pharaoh is turned towards me, full-on entertained, wanting to see how I'll handle this. I prepare for a lot of situations, but I can honestly say I did not prepare for my sister to ask me for a condom. That's on me. She's living with me now, and I should have known, because she's not a little kid anymore, and when I left home, she was only 14. 4 years later, and yeah, things change. People change. I've been starting to realize that. Just as I go to respond, she adds, I know that you know that I have a boyfriend.
You know?
My brows furrow.
Pharaoh told me what security discussed, and I wanted to wait for Luna to tell me herself.
Quinn felt guilty and spilled everything he said to SFO, she explains. I didn't care that he said anything, except I really don't want Mom and Dad to know until me and Andrew are serious. We're still in that middle phase, you know?
I don't know about middle phases. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Pharaoh nods.
Make sure you're on the same page with this guy. Middle phases can be tricky.
Luna smiles. Yeah, I will.
I glance at Pharaoh. I'm glad he has experience in this and can help my sister when I can't.
I don't know. It feels right. Like this is how life is supposed to be.
Andrew's coming over?
I ask Luna.
Or is he already here?
He's coming here in a bit.
She bobs her head.
So, condom?
I adjust my sling on my bare chest, the material cutting into my shoulder.
Didn't Mom take you to get birth control? I want to be extra prepared.
She looks between us.
I don't want another scare, okay?
Pharaoh nods.
Fair enough.
He tips his head to me.
We don't have any condoms that this guy can use.
That realization dawns on me, too. Luna scrunches her brows.
Why not?
Jane!
I call down the stairwell. Pharaoh taps the doorframe, considering withholding the truth, but he tells her, honestly,
the probability that this guy is the same size as us is low, and you're not going to want the condom to slip off.
Aren't there just three condom sizes? Luna asks,
and as Jane ascends the stairs in her purple tutu and knit sweater, cupping a mug of coffee, my sister repeats the question.
Jane, aren't there just three condom sizes?
Janie smiles brightly at me like I'm dealing with the most curious, intriguing familial dilemma that's occurred in the past 24 hours. We would both prefer a condom crisis over any of our siblings or cousins being emotionally or physically hurt.
Ma soeur a besoin de préservatif.
I say to Jane.
Le jour est venu.
My sister needs a condom. The day has come. Three stairs below, Jane props her hip on the wall.
Ils grandissent si vite.
They grow up so fast. We're the oldest of these families, and everyone just seems young to us. I can't change that. Jane answers my sister in a breezy voice.
There's a great and terrible variety, but the main sizes are small, regular, and large. How can I help?
She trails off, smile fading at Luna's odd appearance. But Jane tries not to draw attention to it. Luna steps down a stair.
I need one.
More than one, I tell Jane. Her boyfriend is coming over.
I have every size,
Jane notes, sipping her coffee.
I'll give you all of them.
All of them? I know why, and my face falls. Janie.
Cobalt.
Pharaoh says with the same tough concern. This is about Nate, the asshole with benefits that stalked me for a while. He wanted to hurt me, and he ended up mostly hurting my best friend and my boyfriend, who can't shake that night, and even Thatcher Moretti, whose guilt lingers. It's ironic, because hurting Jane and Pharaoh is a direct shot to my heart. So really that asshole got what he wanted. Jane pries a piece of frizzy hair off her pink lips and only looks at me.
I have no use for condoms when there's no dick in the world, small, regular, or large, that I'd trust to enter my vagina.
I shake my head. You could, eventually.
These condoms will expire by then.
Jane raises her mug.
So let them not go to waste, Muffy. They should be used by people who can have glorious and beautiful sex.
While I've been basking in a newfound world of sex without compromise or fear, my best friend has taken 5 million steps backward because of this fucking asshole. And I want her to be safe and feel loved and free. Pharaoh straightens off the doorframe.
You're really planning to be celibate for the rest of your life?
Jane lifts her blue eyes to him.
I can live fine without falling in love, so I can live just as easily without a penis.
Pharaoh arches his brows. You love sex, I tell my best friend.
I love to masturbate.
Jane sips her coffee again.
Same.
Luna nods. I rub my face with my one hand.
not sure how I should feel. My neck is hot, and Pharaoh looks partially amused, partially ready to wrap this up. I didn't get him off yet, and the mood has been pretty much slaughtered. But I'll revive it. Jane motions for Luna to descend the staircase.
Come to my bedroom, Luna. I'll teach you everything the men can't.
Janie glances back at me. I mouth, merci. She taps her cheek and mouths, feel better. She's referring to my burn from the coffee. I almost smile, and when I return to my bedroom with Pharaoh, my mind reels through the whole day. Was everything okay with the hospital? I ask, while we draw together. He took the call while I did the Instagram live, and I forgot to ask. He unbuttons my jeans.
They wanted to make sure I could comply with HIPAA.
Isn't that the thing that protects a patient's privacy? Pharaoh starts to smile.
That thing is a law. And yeah, it's there to ensure healthcare providers will keep medical records and other health information private.
I think harder. They called because you were doxxed, I realize. Pharaoh looks surprised that I figured it out, but also he looks like he loves me. Like really loves me. And I wrap my arm around his shoulder as he tells me.
They were afraid I wouldn't be able to maintain privacy for a patient, but I talked them down.
He eyes my mouth as much as I eye his.
Everything is fine, Wolf Scout.
But I sense an uneasiness. Really? He nods, clutches my jaw, and whispers against my lips.
I hope so.
20.
Maximoff Hale.
This is my thing, Moffy. You can't have it.
We're at a 1920s speakeasy-themed bar. It's nearly empty. I sit on a round leather stool and my best friend rattles a silver cocktail shaker on the other side of the counter. Jane's mixology instructor is an actual bartender dressed in a fedora, bow tie, and suit vest. While he slices limes next to her, I catch him scrutinizing her, then me. Not pretending that this conversation doesn't interest him. I focus on Janie.
I'm not trying to take your thing, I say seriously. But maybe we can try to find a passion together, seeing as I am passionless now.
She snatches an ice cube from a bucket and tosses it at me. I dodge with a smile.
You have a passion, she says. It's just being disrupted for the time being.
I'm aware that charity exists beyond the company I built. I can still attend functions and donate money and time, but I'm not looking to head a corporation.
I don't want charity to be a job, I tell Janie. I'd rather not set an alarm to it.
For the longest time, I've chased responsibility, and I won't stop running towards my family. I won't slow down for anything. But with Pharaoh, I've experienced what it's like to just take it easy, to exist and breathe. And when it comes to work life, I want the simple enjoyment. Not a CEO position, not managing 100-some employees.
It's official then?
Jane asks, setting down the shaker. Frilly sleeves of a shirt stick out from her cheetah print tee.
You won't return to HMC Philanthropies?
It feels official, I say with a nod. A smile pulls her freckled cheeks.
In that case, you most certainly must join me in our quest to find a passion.
No, you are right, I interject. This is your thing. I'm not sharing in Jane's quest for passion, because she'll be so determined to find mine she'll forget her search. I see that and how excited she is for me. I can't do that to her. Jane looks like I punctured her grand, elaborate plans for eternal life friendship.
Muffy.
I feign confusion. I could have fucking sworn I'm supposed to be your super amazing, unbiased taste tester for all the non-alcoholic drinks. I gesture to the bar. Is my drink invisible? She smiles softly.
Fine. I'll be solo until you change your mind.
Last month, Jane finished her online degree and graduated from Princeton. Her deadline for finding her passion ended with that diploma. She was supposed to give up her search and become the full-time CFO of HMC Philanthropies. But when I was ousted, she quit her position. It's an upside that I don't forget. Because Janie, as a CFO of any company, sounds like a royal circle of hell for my best friend. While Jane rattles the shaker again, I catch Thatcher risking a glance at her from the very end of the bar where he's been standing guard on duty. I've been nice to Thatcher in the past, but fuck him with capital letters blares in my head on repeat. Fuck him for punching my boyfriend. Fuck him for thinking I'd cheat and hook up with my new bodyguard. Fuck him. I drill a glare into his forehead and he sees, rotating more towards the entrance. If he feels any sort of regret, I can't tell. He just looks stern to me. I rest my hand on my tight shoulder.
Jane,
Jack Hyland calls out to my cousin. The exec producer has a knee on the stool next to me. His frayed shorts and tank look more Long Beach style than Philly. And while he grips an expensive camera, he directs the lens at Jane. Are you afraid that if your passion involves alcohol, the public might think it's insensitive? Considering both of your uncle's history of alcoholism. My head swerves to Jack. Going with the hard-hitting questions there, Jack. He's filming us for We Are Calloway, and sometimes I forget he's recording, until the questions start rolling in. Jack never shifts the camera off Jane.
You don't have to answer if you don't want to, he reminds her. But this is naturally what people will think.
Jane places a martini glass on the bar.
The public will always have an opinion,
she answers to Jack. We rarely speak into the camera unless it's a sit-down interview.
So I can't let them decide what my passion should be. Even when it's easier pleasing other people, I need to try to be true to myself.
Plus, I say to Jack and check my texts. She loves beer.
Oui.
Jane smiles.
Le brasserie la semaine prochaine.
The brewery is next week. No new texts. I was hoping for an update from Farrell, and I'm strangely all caught up on family group messages. No unread emails. No notifications. It's almost like I have all this free time and no job. Even my brain is making pitifully sad jokes. I'm an heir to multiple Fortune 500 companies. If I wanted to not work for the rest of my life, I could. My troubles are insignificant. You don't need to tell me. Jack translates French on his phone app and then asks,
If you've scheduled a brewery next week, do you already think mixology will fail?
His questions will appear on TV with closed captions. The audience is led to believe a random producer is talking. No mention of Jack Hyland will be on screen. You don't know his name unless you search on IMDb. The docuseries is cinema verite style, where we acknowledge that we're being filmed and talk directly to the producer. Janie copies an earlier demonstration from the bartender and pours mint green liquid into the martini glass.
I'm just following the numbers, she says to Jack. My success rate is 0%. Chances are I need to have other options lined up.
Jane plops a cherry and slices the glass to me.
Okay, give it to me, Muffy.
She means my opinion, but the bartender interprets this differently. He makes a choked noise, then coughs to hide it. I narrow my eyes while he wipes his hands on a dish rag. Thatcher angles towards us again, arms crossed and out of camera shot. He glares at the bartender, who remains the only stranger in the speakeasy bar. He already signed an NDA. All the buttoned booths and wooden tables are empty.
That was not sexual,
Jane says to the bartender, beating me to the words.
You thinking it was? That says more about you than me.
He fixes his fedora, cheeks reddened.
I'm sorry. I really don't believe you two are...
He cringes, and he won't even look at me. My jaw is cut like sharp marble.
I know it's just a rumor,
he adds. That confirmation is a good indication that our fan con tour helped. Jane smiles more kindly than most would. I exhale and motion to the guy. We'll move on if you do. And I'd like to move on. So would Jane. She wipes the wet counter around my non-alcoholic martini.
Yeah, definitely.
He nods and apologizes again to my cousin before asking her what drink she'd like to make next.
A dirty martini, she says.
He reaches for a bottle of gin on the shelf and starts spouting off instructions. My phone buzzes, and honest to God, my heart flutters like I'm in the fifth grade, receiving a Valentine from a crush. It's my boyfriend. 1 week. It's been 1 week since he returned to his residency at Philadelphia General, and my brain translates a text as Pharaoh gifting me a piece of red construction paper shaped into a heart. Glitter glued to it. Fuck my sappy brain. But I understand my semi-infatuation. Pharaoh and I haven't spoken or seen each other since he left for an excruciatingly long shift at the hospital. He said he probably wouldn't even get time to text. Something about double shifts, low-staffed. I don't get how any of it works, but it's been 29 hours since I last heard from him. I'd be lying to say I haven't been counting. 29 hours without talking. 29 hours without touching. And with a high sex drive, that last one has me pent up and resorting to jerking off more than usual. I typically try to come every day, or else it feels like my balls are going to explode. Even on the FanCon bus, I managed to masturbate when Pharaoh and I couldn't fuck. Being horny, it's nothing new for me. Being horny and having a boyfriend who's not around all the time, that is new. I trust myself fully, and my hand is a decent alternative. But I've never fantasized more about him than I have when he's gone. I've replayed the first time he topped me on loop. I tune out the bartender's dirty martini instructions and pop open the text. Scanning the words, my spirits burst like the pop of a balloon. Running late. Sorry, Wolf Scout. Pharaoh. Before I type a reply, another text pops up. I'm still going to make it. Save one of Jane's terrible drinks for me. Pharaoh.
Est-ce que ça va, Muffy?
Jane asks while measuring gin in a shot glass. Are you okay, Muffy? It's Pharaoh. I set my elbow on the bar, phone in hand. I reread the text. He's going to be late. I look up. Jane. Jen overflows her shot glass.
Melt.
She curses and sops up the spill with a dish rag. She flashes me a consoling look.
There's a 72% chance your drink may cheer you up, old chap.
I smile and reach for the martini, just as another text pings. Miss you. Pharaoh. My chest tightens. I quickly respond. No worries, I'll save you that drink. Lately, I haven't bothered typing out the correct spelling of you, and I've just stuck with the letter. He's gotten onto me about it a couple times, and it just makes me want to do it more. I'm about to add, can't wait to see you, but then I think about how it'll make him feel. Maybe concerned, like I'm sitting here pining for him and not living my own life. I can survive without Pharaoh around me all the time, but I do feel his absence. I overthink the text, typing and deleting and typing and deleting. I take too long because Pharaoh replies first. You okay, Pharaoh? Fuck. I clutch my phone harder, thinking. I don't know how to do this. Large, intense gaps of zero communication. We barely even used to text because we were with each other all the time. It's weird to think back to the day he became my bodyguard. I couldn't even imagine my childhood crush in my life 24/7, and now, not having him is a struggle. And I'm overthinking again. My phone rings. Great. Pharaoh is calling me. But I'm selfishly glad he did. I think it would have taken me a solid millennium to type out a text. I put my phone to my ear and reach for my mint green drink. I was texting you back, I say before he can speak. I'm sorry, man. I don't want to take up your time or distract you. Maximov. He cuts me off. If I didn't have time to call you, I wouldn't have called you. I nod a couple times to myself. All right. How are you doing? Good. Shit has finally slowed down. I thought you liked the high-intensity stuff. Not at the end of a shift. He's quick to ask. You okay? I'm all right. Just drinking this drink here. I take a sip of the martini, and as soon as the liquid hits my tongue, my cheeks pucker. Jesus Christ, Jane. She notices.
Oh no. Too sour?
Yep. My cheeks hurt.
I'll make you another.
She swipes my martini glass out of my hand. On the phone, Pharaoh tells me, I'm glad you're having fun, Wolf Scout. I wish you were here. I rub my lips together before replying. All the fun in the damn world. It's a regular rager here, I say dryly. I'm planning on trying shrooms next, but the non-drug kind, like a criminy mushroom or maybe a portobello. I can practically feel his eyes rolling before he laughs, and as the sound fades, the line goes quiet. The silence is like a raw, aching thread of longing. I miss you, I admit out loud.
I know you do, Pharaoh says, like an ass.
I groan, but I'm not able to shelter a fucking smile. At least he can't see it. I meant, I don't miss you at all. I haven't been thinking about you for even half a second. It's hard to even joke. It hurts.
That's too bad, Pharaoh says, because I've missed you.
His words are tender, like I can't touch them. I shouldn't. Voices muffle in the background on his side. Quickly, he tells me,
I need to go, but I should be finished here in 30 minutes. See you soon.
See you soon. See you. We hang up. I refuse to look at my watch as a countdown to his arrival. I already catch myself doing it once, and once is enough. Luckily, a great distraction bounds through the entrance. Sullivan arrives from the pool, wet brown hair soaking the shoulders of her jean jacket.
Fuck, sorry I'm late,
she apologizes to Jane.
I didn't want to leave until I beat my morning time.
Butterfly?
Jack asks, panning the camera to Sully.
Backstroke today.
She claims the stool next to me, not flinching at the single camera. The fan contour helped ease her in. I've been on the docuseries since I was 3 years old, Jane since she was 6, and for Sully, this will be her first time, and she's 20. I notice how Sully watches Akara and Jack fist bump into a hug in greeting, and she hangs her head and focuses on braiding her wet hair. A few days ago, in the Meadows treehouse, she told me about how Akara and Jack are becoming good friends, and she's been feeling weird.
I'm not sure why,
she explained to me, hugging a beaded pillow.
Maybe you're into him, I speculated.
Sully frowned.
Him who?
Akara, I said. Sully laughed.
No fucking way, Kitz is like...
She stared up at the treehouse ceiling. Handcrafted paper flowers cascading off wooden beams.
He's Kitz.
The way she said that reminded me of me, and how I couldn't make sense of my feelings for Pharaoh and what he meant to me in my life. I just knew he meant a whole hell of a lot. I think you're into him, Sol, I said.
I'm fucking not.
She chucked a pillow at me, and when I threw it back, she repeated strongly,
I'm not, Moff. If I thought I was, I'd fucking tell you.
I didn't expect her denial. What about Jack, then? She frowned more and shook her head before groaning into the pillow. I rubbed her back, and we started talking about swimming. At the speakeasy, I think about that moment in the treehouse, especially as her bodyguard rests against the bar, out of the camera's frame. Akara tells Jack, the time was Sully's personal best. My cousin ties the end of her braid.
It's still too fucking slow, Kitz. I couldn't even qualify with that time.
But backstroke has never been your thing, so,
Akara reminds her. It's a good time. He saunters around the camera and ends up standing beside Thatcher Moretti further down the bar. And I spot my new bodyguard. He's been at a wooden table guarding the entrance. Skyscraping tall, bulky, bald-bearded, and the former bodyguard of Lauren Hale. My dad requested that Bruno Bendoni be transferred to my detail. He told me,
You don't need to deal with a new, inexperienced bodyguard, bud. Take mine.
Thanks to my dad, it's been an easier transition. But there'll be times where I search for my bodyguard, expecting to see that widening know-it-all smile and the cocky raise of his brows. Instead, I meet a stringent, severe face, and the wind dies in my sails. I turn to Sully, who stretches over the bar and snatches a cherry.
Why are you swimming backstroke?
I ask. Since she used the word qualify, she's not competing anymore, so I'm confused.
I need a goal,
Sully tells me. I go rigid.
What?
Jane looks between us and pops an olive in a martini glass.
Mafi,
you have a goal. The ultra, I say toughly. It's been your goal for months, and that's not fucking changing. It's not changing because of me. Sully bites the cherry off its stem.
The course can be fucking dangerous solo. It doesn't feel like a good idea to do it alone. And my dad's bad knee can't handle the terrain.
Sully, I'm running this marathon with you, I say adamant, not backing down. I've already started training. She coughs on a cherry.
What? You're in a sling, Moff.
Jane shakes her head at me like I'm a disaster to myself. I can do a lot in a sling. I've spent most of my free time in a gym. My hamstrings and quads are sore from the non-stop leg days, but I'm strengthening every muscle until I can work on my right arm and shoulder. And I ran a mile yesterday. Sully looks horrified. All right, it was a walk, not a run, I clarify. A PT was there so I wouldn't kill myself. I recognize that I need another person in the room to stop me from overexerting myself. And I'm not proud of my lack of self-restraint. Sully contemplates this now.
You really think you can run at 250K?
250 kilometers in 7 days. That's 155 miles. In Chile. For Sully. I promise I can. I nod repeatedly. Sully hesitates before nodding back. Jane slides over the dirty martini.
Here, Sully, she says. I've named this drink You Can't Say No to a Stubborn Maximov.
Sully smiles.
Yeah, fucking feels that way.
She tilts her head to me and holds the martini.
You know you're as hard-headed as my dad.
She cringes.
Fuck, sorry. I didn't mean
to compare me to him. It's all right, I say truthfully, and I catch Jack's warm smile behind the camera. I know how much I'm like Reich Meadows, and I've been reaching a place where I can be proud of the similarities. I no longer feel like who I am is a knock against my dad. And I've realized something. My dad raised me to be like Reich, because he loved his brother more than he loved himself. That's the hard truth, because I just wish I could reach back in time and tell my dad that he'd have a son who loves him so goddamn much, and then maybe he'd realize that he's worthy of being loved too. Sully sips the dirty martini. How is it? I ask while Jane shakes another non-alcoholic one for me.
Strong.
Sully smacks her lips together.
But most drinks taste fucking strong to me.
She goes in for another sip.
Good sign.
I tell Jane while Sully gulps the liquor. My best friend smiles brightly and procures a clean martini glass. Sully rotates slightly to Akara.
You want to drink, Kitz? I can get a temp bodyguard for the night. You can go off duty.
Akara fixes his earpiece. Not tonight, Sul. But I appreciate the offer. She faces the bar, lost in thought, and then she takes another sip. Jane polishes a glass and makes a concerted effort to angle away from Thatcher. About this time, she'd be chatting to her bodyguard and tripping over her words like she normally does around him. I almost feel badly that she's lost someone to talk to, even if he doesn't say a lot back. But then I picture the welt on Pharaoh's face. And my sympathy dies. Thatcher braves another glance at Janie, and his hand slides over his hard, scruffy jaw. The longer he looks at her, the more frazzled my best friend becomes. She fumbles with a shaker.
Thatch.
Her voice dies in a croak and she clears her throat.
That drink.
She motions to the polished glass.
Is empty. But just wait, Muffy. It'll be dreadfully beautiful.
Je n'y aucun doute,
I say. I have no doubt. All I know is that Janie deserves the best, and Thatcher is one of the only names on my very short shit list. He's not the fucking best. He's far from it. On impulse, I glance at my wristwatch. 30 minutes have passed, and Pharaoh still isn't here. I just hope he's okay.
21. Pharaoh Keen. Pharaoh, look here! Look here! I'm not looking at these fuckers. Paparazzi try to be blood-sucking ticks, but for me, they're more like gnats. Cameras swarm me and my parked motorcycle while I pull off my helmet. Look here! What do you do at the hospital? How are you, Pharaoh? Pissed. That I'm not on time for this mixology thing. When I say I'm going to make it, I'll make it. But shit, I don't enjoy being held up, especially when I could have been with Maximov. My favorite part of the day is returning to my tight-laced, strong-willed boyfriend. And traffic had been bad. But it's not what made me an extra half hour late. I run a hand through my messy hair and leave my new Yamaha on the curb, right outside the Philly bar. Look here! Still not looking, I make my way to the entrance of Killer Gatsby and send a quick text to Maximov. Here. Before I push into the bar, the door starts cracking open. Maximov wedges himself in the entrance, and the first thing I notice his marbleized, impassive face. Something happened. My pulse spikes, and I immediately skim him up and down, jumbled emotions slamming into me from all angles. He's okay. He's okay. But something must be wrong with his family. I clutch his hand the same time he grabs for mine, and Maximoff pulls me inside. I shut the cameras out behind us, and I frown at my surroundings. Where is everyone? Fringed lamps cast dim light on crystal bottles shelved behind an empty bar. All the tables are bare, but if I strain my ears, I can pick up muttering. In the back lounge area, he brings me in that direction. I stare hard at Maximoff, concerned about him. He's bottled up, but if this were a 911 severe crisis, he'd be running. He's walking, so I'm guessing he's settled this storm and I'm here for the aftermath. Is it Jane? I ask. Sully. His body is stringent. I need you to check on her. Okay? I squeeze his hand. I'm here, Wolf Scout. His chest tries to rise. We turn a corner near an old record player. Gold and black beads drape an archway, and once we walk through, I hone in on an extremely passed-out Sullivan Meadows. On a dark green buttoned couch, all 6 feet of her athletic frame slumps lifelessly against Akara's side. Her squared jaw starts sliding off his shoulder. Akara pulls her closer and holds her waist to support her weight. Seriousness hardens his gaze, and he looks up at me like she needs your help. She's been out for the last 15 minutes. How much did she drink? I let go of my boyfriend's hand and rest a knee on the couch. Leaning over, I put my fingers to her carotid artery. Akara brushes Sully's thick hair off her neck for me. Not a lot, Maximoff answers, his left hand clutching his slinged elbow. An attempt at crossing his arms. I'd joke about how he's inexperienced with alcohol, but time and place, and plus, he adds, I think. I'm about to double-check with Akara.
I'm calculating her blood alcohol concentration level.
Jane chimes in, voice unnaturally high. She's upset. I turn my head and see Jane seated on a Queen Anne velveteen chair. Right next to an unlit fireplace, she presses a pink calculator with guilt-ridden urgency. I ignore Thatcher, who towers 3 feet away from Jane. Jack Hyland is on a chaise nearby. His camera is powered off and lens turned away from Sully. Any footage of her passed out won't be aired. I focus on Sully and talk to Jane. I don't need an exact BAC, Cobalt, just tell me what drink she had. Jane speaks so quickly in her breezy-as-hell voice that I can't understand a fucking thing. I raise my brows at Akara. 2 shots, 2 cocktails, he answers. A single shot was in each cocktail. Okay, that shouldn't knock out a 6-foot girl who weighs 160, 165? Around there? Akara nods. Her BAC has to be low, but she's not a regular drinker. How much sleep has she had? I step back since her pulse is normal. I stand next to Maximoff. Not much, Akara says, adjusting Sully again. There you go. That's most likely why she's passed out after 4 shots. I glance back at Jane, who's stuck calculating. She'll be fine, Cobalt. People pass out from drinking. Shit happens. Jane raises a finger at me. Not a middle finger. A pointer finger to shut up. Maximoff whispers, it'll make her feel better. I assume that Jane was the one supplying and mixing Sully's drinks, and I don't need to ask why they're all tense. From an outsider's standpoint, having a friend face down drunk is a nuisance at best. I've lugged Donnelly's ass up a flight of stairs at 4 a.m. before, and we crack jokes about it the next morning. From a security standpoint, having a celebrity pass out, one who is female and has a family history of alcoholism, is a fucking PR nightmare. The moniker Drunken Heiress will follow Sully around for the rest of her life. From a friend and family standpoint, none of us want Sully to have to deal with bad shit. I turn to Maximoff, sweeping his sharp features again. Who's carrying her out of here? A car already picked her up, and she looked dead. He shakes his head once, neck stiff. She can't be carried out, and there's no way outside without a camera catching us. Not good. Akara says what I've realized. We're staying here until she wakes up. Maximoff tries to crack his knuckles. The longer I stare at him, the more I know something is eating at my boyfriend, and fuck, I just want to be alone with him. It's the only way he'll unwind. Follow me, Wolf Scout. I take his hand and try to lead him to the men's bathroom. He ends up next to me, step for step, and he opens the dark wooden door. I easily let him have that lead. Teasing him isn't a good idea right now. The bathroom is as elaborate as the bar. Gold fixtures and faucet, 3 obsidian sinks and urinals, 2 varnished wooden stalls. Maximoff puts a